Hello, I'm Lina Khumudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization has confirmed an outbreak of Marburg virus disease in Ghana. Samples from two unrelated patients were analyzed at the Institut Pasteur in Dakar, Senegal, and came back positive. The first case was a 26-year-old man who checked into a hospital on June 26 and passed away a day later, while the second was a 51-year-old male who checked in the same hospital on June 28 and died on the same day. The WHO says that preparations for a possible outbreak response are being set up swiftly as further investigations are underway. Both patients are unrelated. Health officials have identified and are monitoring more than 90 contacts, including health workers and community members. This is the second time the zoonotic disease has been detected in West Africa after Guinea confirmed a single case last year. Previous outbreaks and sporadic cases of Marburg in Africa have been reported in Angola, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, South Africa, and Uganda. Marburg is a highly infectious viral hemorrhagic fever in the same family as the Ebola virus disease and is spread to people by fruit bats. It spreads among people through direct contact with infected bodily fluids. The virus is often fatal and symptoms include headache, fever, muscle pains, vomiting blood, and bleeding. There are no current approved vaccines or treatments for Marburg viral disease. However, doctors say increased intake of fluid improves chances of survival. Now we turn to health systems. The COVID-19 pandemic has demonstrated the need to improve health security and build resilient health systems in Africa and beyond, according to experts. They say vaccination programs, access to healthcare, and epidemic control are part of health security strategies that can help countries better address recurring and emerging health crises. For more on strengthening health systems, I spoke with Dr. Trevor Mundell, president of the Global Health Division at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Trevor Mundell, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I wanted to ask you your comments on the announcement made during the Kigali summit. $4 billion in funding has been committed to end malaria and neglected tropical diseases. What does it mean and what will it look like?
Well, it's a very significant commitment, particularly in the context of this meeting, which is the first live meeting get-together in person after the, well, not after, but after the pandemic period when we've had a lot of difficult times, and where we've seen progress on malaria and NTDs actually stall. There has been a lot of resilience in the system, so we've still managed to get a lot of 90% of bed nets out. But unfortunately, we've seen malaria deaths creep up. And on NTDs, there have been, you know, at least a few hundred million of people who were not able to access some of the drugs that are important. So there is a need for a catch-up, and then hopefully with this new funding, we'd get back on track to make further progress.
Coming back to health system, the COVID pandemic emerged more than 2 years ago with some great challenges for health systems in industrialized countries as well as developing countries. As you look at the state of healthcare in Africa in light of the pandemic, what is your assessment?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen quite different situations break out across the continent. On the one hand, I think there's been some exciting acceleration in the digital health arena. People have adopted various applications and platforms. There's been a surge in funding of startups in digital health. But we've also seen, and this particularly was true related to vaccines and the delivery of vaccines, that there's been a challenge with a lack of infrastructure on the delivery side to really get out vaccines in the quantities that we'd like them to be getting out as supplies become available. Initially, there was this huge inequity in supply, and as that has actually improved on the supply front, we now have this delivery issue, which really impacts and really is related to the state of health systems, that in a number of countries, you know, infrastructure is really not adequate for the needs of the populations.
What are some of the major structural barriers to strengthening health security and health system in African countries?
In some ways, I'm ideally located here in Kigali in Rwanda to talk about what Rwanda has been doing and contrast that with some of the gaps that exist in other countries. So what has happened in Rwanda, and I had a great opportunity to visit some of the clinics here and understand some of the progress on digital health in the last couple of days, is invested in primary healthcare clinics across the country. So there's a very solid foundation of primary healthcare. And that's been absolutely critical. There's been an investment in connecting these primary healthcare clinics digitally so that there's data available to know where problems are appearing, where there might be some nutritional problems that need to be specifically addressed. If there's a malaria outbreak, this is known quite quickly within the data system. And the other key intervention over here has been a national insurance scheme, so that 80% of people are covered by a national insurance scheme, regardless of one's individual ability to pay. And this national insurance scheme intersects very positively with the digital advances made over here. It's quite easy for digital providers like Babbel to come in and have a solution which now gets reimbursed through the national insurance, much simplifying the activities for an individual who's got a problem, goes to a clinic or accesses on an app, a digital health system. All of this is taken care of within the national payment system. So if you take that as really excellence in how one is addressing the population needs via primary care, then what we see in some other countries is a lack of clinics, lack of primary healthcare clinics, particularly in the rural areas. And even where there are clinics, they may not be in a chain to receive the adequate commodities that they need. So there may be stockouts of critical antibiotics or vaccines for people who go to the clinics. And then there's the payment, whether there's a national insurance scheme or not. So I think that Rwanda is a wonderful example of how to really make investments at the primary care level, which address a lot of these issues. And now some of the questions are, how can we transplant the situation here to many other countries?
I wanted you to kind of narrow down on technology. You touched on that as well. To what extent is technology a game changer in strengthening health systems in Africa?
Lenore, that there is a proliferation of technologies now across Africa and huge excitement over there. The one trend I'd point to, in the last couple of years, there more than 900 apps have emerged in sub-Saharan Africa. Of health apps, actually. Now, these are in various domains. Some may be around clinic management of cases. So how do you manage individuals who come with a problem to a clinic? Others may be around management of hospital systems. Others are around surveillance and management of outbreaks. There's one which is quite effective that's been deployed in Nigeria, for instance. So there are many different systems over here, and that is both a joy that there is such energy, but only about half of those 900 apps have actually been deployed and scaled nationally. So often they would be smaller ventures, in a province or a state or even a city, and they wouldn't really be scaled, at least half of them not scaled nationally. Many of these are based on different platforms so that they're not really interoperable. And in some cases, in the public health system, in the malaria case, for instance, looking across countries that are covered by PMI, Prisons Malaria Initiative, there are 53 different apps for community health workers working on malaria. So you can imagine a single health worker could have multiple apps that they need to use. So there is this energy and this proliferation, which has been great, but somehow we need to deal with the fragmentation that has occurred.
So when we look at the role of data, which is very important in accuracy, what is the growing role of data in personalizing the healthcare experience with African patients? And how much is data accuracy part of this strategy in strengthening health system?
Data is really at the core of this, and how we gain access to accurate data, and you know how we actually then use it for decision making. So there are a lot of some instances where data is collected, but not as effectively deployed for a variety of reasons. So let me just go through a couple of examples where you know data has been essential. One program we had in Benin was around just the delivery, a fairly simple example, the delivery of bed nets to houses in the community. And previously, these were delivered by lists of people and where they live, and then getting the bed nets and delivering them to houses. But in this last round, we were able to put codes on the identification, digital codes on each net, and then were able to track the delivery of the net and geotag where the net had actually been delivered. And there was also the ability with satellite photos to associate the geotag points with housing. So we had a very accurate accounting of who was getting bed nets. And this led to a dramatic improvement in being sure that virtually every household had the bed nets that they needed in Benin. And it is somewhat amazing that why didn't we do this before? It doesn't seem difficult to put a digital tag on a bed net and then track with a code where it would actually ends up. But we do need to do that with some critical commodities, and we need to do that with vaccines as well. It's not currently done for many of the vaccines that are delivered. We know that the vaccines are in a central warehouse, but we don't know when they're actually used and what the point of use was, and how difficult is it to put a QR code on a vaccine vial. So there are some simple interventions where data is going to be critical to understanding and improving the protection that people have in the bed net case. You know, there are other examples, for instance, with HIV care. Critically, to determine what needs to be done, one needs to know certain information about the population. Well, first of all, you need to be sure about who is coming to which clinics, and are people switching between clinics because they're getting antiretrovirals. They need to get their prescriptions on time, and we need to be able to track that from a compliance point of view. But the other critical parameter is our ability to suppress the virus, the viral load tracking. So we need data from the population to basically understand how successful is our delivery of antiretrovirals in this community. And if it's not, we're not getting a high rate of suppression of virus in the community, we then can understand it's because there's not adequate education and outreach. We are not providing 3 month supplies of antiretrovirals, or we don't have a community-based care program. So many interventions are gated by that simple data point in HIV care delivery, which is the population viral load suppression.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. We'll have more on my conversation with Dr. Trevor Mundell with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in a moment. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is James Barton, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has announced recently a $140 million commitment over 4 years in support of new initiatives and research directed by African institutions and leaders that accelerate progress toward ending malaria and neglected tropical diseases and contribute to the continent's COVID-19 recovery. Here is more of my conversation with Dr. Trevor Mundell, president of the Global Health Division at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
There's a saying that investing in health is investing in national security. How do you respond to that?
Yes, you know, I think that the COVID pandemic has been a wake-up call to everyone. And we've understood that the consequences of not having invested in healthcare infrastructure in the context of a pandemic situation means, you know, vaccinations and vaccines are not able to be distributed to high-risk individuals in the first instance. And it can be directly correlated with hospital systems being overburdened and deaths that shouldn't occur occurring in the community. So there's a very direct link between health systems and the strength of those health systems and the ability to respond in a pandemic. It's tragic, really, that, you know, there are the chronic pandemics that have been going on that people have ignored around malaria and HIV and TB. And those are huge problems in parts of sub-Saharan Africa. And a lot of those problems are based on inadequate healthcare infrastructure. If you have a good health system delivering antiretrovirals to HIV-positive individuals on a consistent basis, you can have tremendously positive effects on both HIV mortality, morbidity, and transmission. But all of those problems seem to be hidden. Now, suddenly, COVID has exposed all of that. I think so. That's out of the huge negative and tragedy of COVID. Maybe the one good fact is that it's exposed that we haven't invested sufficiently in healthcare systems. And that was seen with the pandemic. But now we need to change that because there are still all the residual problems which needed those same healthcare systems. And you know, that is the huge challenge for us that we need to take on in the next few years.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has invested a great deal in strengthening global health, particularly in Africa. Would you kind of give us a couple of examples in terms of program or projects that have shown clear results for health system strengthening and health security?
Yes. So, you know, I'll get onto the digital ones. We've been talking about digital here, and I've mentioned some already. But, you know, I think particularly in the surveillance area, you know, people have looked at that situation. Do we know where there are various outbreaks, even of malaria, in regions of Africa? And are we certain about our surveillance data? We were aware of the data gap that we had in surveillance, and we worked with the Africa CDC in 2019. We launched the African Pathogen Genomics Institute with the Africa CDC. And the intention over there was to have 20 institutes around Africa that would be built up in terms of their capacity to sequence various pathogens. And we were thinking of malaria, and we were thinking of other viral diseases. We didn't know about COVID at that time. But when COVID struck, there was this nascent infrastructure of the institute that had been established only in 2019, so it just started. But we were able to put some supplies, and there was already training and some capacity in those areas, and use that sequencing capacity to start to sequence COVID mid-2020 or so. And that persisted for most of that year. There were only a couple of thousand sequences in the major sequence database from Africa. But by the time we got to around the middle of 2021, we were up at 70,000. And that dramatically impacts, you know, where are we seeing COVID outbreaks? Is it in cities? Is it also in rural areas? Who is getting infected? You know, are we really seeing problems in the older population, younger population? So, and what are the variants that are important? So I think that that Pathogen Genomics Institute was a fundamental contribution. Sadly, it became highly relevant in the pandemic. We are very committed to this area of surveillance. You know, we've been looking at surveillance for mortality in kids, for instance, in infants. And we've invested in a network across Africa, which is called CHAMPS. It's about childhood mortality and prevention of that. And beyond the CHAMPS, which are a few sites that are actually doing very detailed surveillance, they are actually able to, when unfortunately a child dies, what was the cause of death? It's often not done very accurately. People often say, well, we have a lot of malaria in this town or in this area, so the child must have died of malaria, and malaria is recorded on the birth certificate. But that may not be true. So we've been able to, in a very respectful way, take some samples from deceased individuals and understand precisely what the cause of death was. And this accurate data now, in a couple of thousand cases, is transforming how we think about what do children die of and what are the major issues? It's not just malaria. In Mozambique, for instance, we have funded as well with partners, not just single sites doing this, but a network across the entire country that is able to establish, why are kids dying? Do we know the real causes? And can we have more precise information so we can make the changes and interventions that we'd like? So I'm tremendously proud of the surveillance work we've been doing in Africa, but so much more needs to be done. And I think the wake-up call from the pandemic is going to get a lot more governments and a lot more other multilateral entities invested in surveillance, which hasn't been the case.
And finally, Trevor Mundell, before we wrap, if you could kind of summarize for us two or three important aspects moving forward with regards to strengthening health security and building resilient health systems in Africa, what would you say?
Well, you know, I think we are really talking about the primary healthcare level, which reaches the mass of the population. So that's about building primary healthcare centers that have quality and building those centers that are distributed in rural as well as semi-urban or urban areas as well. But it's not just building bricks and mortar infrastructure. There are all these new opportunities, the digital tools that everybody's excited about, which may be able to leapfrog us to having coverage of health issues for populations even before all the building has been done. And 77% of people in sub-Saharan Africa are close to a 3G signal for a cell phone. Imagine if we could be as successful as has been rolled out here in Rwanda, you know, everywhere. But that's going to require some specific thinking. It's not going to just be we put digital and apps everywhere. Governments and donors and multilaterals are going to have to think about putting in national systems in a horizontal layer that can be used, like has been done in Ethiopia, you know, with a very thoughtful digital strategy. Malawi has also been involved in putting in a horizontal system so that any apps that are developed are going to be interoperable. So I think that from the health system perspective, the digital aspect of that is super important. But if it's done in a naive way, there'll be a lot of wasteful apps. But if we can replicate the success in Rwanda, and that's been taken up by a number of other countries, then we're on a pathway to accelerate this journey to have much better primary health care for the population in sub-Saharan Africa.
Trevor Mundell, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Anoud. Thank you.
That was Dr. Trevor Mundell, president of the Global Health Division at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, every year, thousands of volunteer doctors, nurses, and other medical professionals travel to various places around the world to conduct medical missions. They donate their time and expertise to provide life-changing treatment and prevention services for people with low or no access to basic and advanced medical care. Let's go to Senegal, where the Africa Mercy, the largest charity-run hospital ship in the world, is at the port of Dakar, delivering free surgical care to people who cannot access safe, affordable, and timely surgery. Khalil Gay reports from Dakar.
In most African countries, health systems are characterized by underfunded public health facilities, and West Africa is lagging behind the rest of the continent. Here, hospitals and health centers are often called places to die. Under such conditions, what would the future be for young Mohamed and Marie Madeleine, who suffer from deformities? Mohamed is a maxillofacial patient. It all started with a very small growth, says his father Maktar. Mohamed had surgery at a local hospital to remove his tumor, but the operation did not go well. The tumor returned and was growing again. Father and son lost hope. 13-year-old Marie Madeleine is an orthopedic patient. She was bullied and mocked at school. Her grandma says it was very painful, but her granddaughter continued to make it to school. Marie Madeleine and Mohamed had no choice but to accept the general belief of their communities, who think their condition is caused by supernatural forces or evil witchcraft. Only hope kept them alive. Marie Madeleine scans the horizon. In the distance, the island of Goree, from which, during slavery days, Western ships used to leave with slaves in subhuman conditions, stored on the floor. But the ship she sees goes past the island to drop anchor at the port of Dakar. It is the Africa Mercy, the biggest hospital ship in service, a huge ship with a great mission to transform lives and serve nations. And hope floated on the Africa Mercy to the shores of Senegal, bringing joy and 21st century medicine free of charge to Marie Madeleine and Mohammed and to thousands with similar deformities.
We are working on the problem of access to safe, affordable, and timely surgery. And so we work on that problem through surgical care. So we come in with our hospital ships and offer free surgery to those that cannot access surgery for one reason or another.
The Global Mercy, 175 meters long, 12 decks, and a crew capacity of 641, is the new ship, a much larger hospital that will allow treatment for many more patients than they can on the Africa Mercy.
It is built with training of local healthcare providers in mind. So the spaces here are much larger to accommodate that observership and that mentorship and that training component.
Wives who have been banished by their husbands or children mocked in schools return to their communities changed, radically transformed, and worthy of finding their place back in the community with a new smile. Khalil Gay for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
The international humanitarian medical NGO Doctors Without Borders has deployed a team of experts to a village in Niger's southeastern region of Damagaram, where at least 30 cases of child malnutrition are recorded daily. The team is also treating people with malaria and distributing mosquito nets to the residents of Magaria village. Yusuf Abdullahi has the report.
In this town of Magaria, which is 90 kilometers from the Nigerian city of Damagaram, hospital workers are recording an increase in the number of children admission. Healthcare workers here say most of the children admitted to this hospital are suffering from severe malnutrition, with at least 30 children being admitted to the hospital every day. Safarau is holding her child as she arrives at the hospital to have him checked. She says he has been suffering from a fever and cough for several days.
My son is vomiting and has diarrhea and is suffering from some lesions in his mouth. Doctors say he is malnourished and have admitted us here.
After seeing the first doctor who examined her son, she says she was referred to a second doctor and then a third. The doctors eventually diagnosed her son with severe malnutrition and they say he needs urgent care.
Doctors Without Borders is currently treating children for malnutrition and malaria. They are also distributing treated mosquito nets to people as part of effort to fight the scourge of malaria.
At another hospital in Tinkum, a village that is 15 kilometers from Magaria town, women here have brought their children, they say, are suffering with various ailments. The hospital authorities say they receive at least 200 children every day suffering from certain diseases related to the onset of the rainy season.
The new strategy that we have come up with now is to bring ourselves closer to these communities and take the burden of treating these ailments off the people and to concentrate on rural areas. We are doing this to also decongest the general hospital in Magaria.
Doctors with the organization say the number of children suffering from malaria and malnutrition could increase in the coming month in the area as more rainfall is recorded.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic and other outbreaks, visit voanews.com or voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hi, Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including jury selection began in the trial of Steve Bannon, an advisor to former President Donald Trump, who was facing charges of contempt of Congress. The charges stem from Bannon's refusal to testify before the Congressional Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday.